Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Juniors. You have not really lived until you've had cheesecake at Juniors. For more information, visit juniorscheesecake.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
A land majestic and untamed, a land majestic and untamed, and we fell into the Grand Canyon.
Rossi, who will be playing live in studio. My name is Greg Bresnitz, one half of Finger on the Pulse. You're listening to Snacky Tunes. Last episode, 2015. What a year. I just have to give a shout out and just remind my future self that I saw a lot of great music this week, including Nico Jar in the Basement and Transpicos. But staring across at me is Sid Silver, Homer Murray, very seriously, from Roebling Tea Room. And River Styx.
Yes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Respectfully. Thank you so much.
Roping Tea Room has always been there since I've been there. I moved June 2005, so it's always been
there forever.
Forever. So there's a lot of questions, but before we get to the opening, what were you doing before that? Anything important? Anything cool?
I had a music career for a long time. Traveling the world, no big deal.
Yeah. Lunachicks?
It's really not a big deal.
It's really, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Moving right along.
It was, yes, Lunachicks.
What took you from being in that band to opening a restaurant? Now it's super trendy, but 10 years ago might not have been the most trendy thing.
Yeah. It wasn't. The band had decided to stop touring, so for the first time I was sort of stuck in one place. And
was this always home?
I'm born and raised, yeah, in Brooklyn. Brooklyn's always home. So thinking carefully about my probably inability to get some sort of a regular job, I thought, geez, what should I do? The only other job I'd ever really had was working in restaurants when I was in, you know, trashy Lower East Side restaurants when I was a teenager.
Any, like, good horror stories or good, like, memorable stories?
Just smoking way too much weed and going to work and, like, dropping shit on people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? But, I mean, I was 18.
Yeah, so who cares?
Exactly.
Any restaurants you were... What were the names of the places you worked?
Let's see. Banditos on 2nd Avenue. Nightbirds and Nightingales, the trashiest.
Nightingale's
like,
still there, no?
No.
No, I think so. It's been a while.
You know, lots of bouncers, prostitutes. Around the clock.
Oh yeah!
Oh my God!
I was your midnight. Nuh-uh.
Absolutely!
Really?
Yeah.
I was the graveyard waitress.
Nice. Okay.
I'd park my little motorcycle out front and work all night there.
It's the first time I ever had pesto.
Shut up.
I thought that was super cool. Yeah, I'll have the chicken pesto sandwich. It was like 6:30 in the morning and my hands are shaking.
And I would work there. I only wanted to work overnight because there were like no real managers or anybody there at night, so I could play the Dead Boys and, Black Sabbath all night and AC/DC without getting in trouble.
I should have introduced myself.
You should have. It was mostly like bouncers, other people that worked in clubs and stuff, bouncers and strippers and stuff. So it was fun.
I just like, it's like two clientele, bouncers or strippers, and like that's it.
Well, it was like the 3 a.m., the rush when everybody's getting out of their work. So
they get off together. They walk you home. You want to grab a bite before we go?
Want to get some
baby
pesto?
Or something?
Super classy. I know a place.
I know a place that puts pesto on a sandwich. Yeah. Ciabatta.
The band stopped and you landed back home, and so what was it? I mean, the landscape of Williamsburg in 2005 is,
I was living on the south side.
Yeah.
And I was living right by Diner and they wouldn't give me a job. I kept going there trying to get a waitressing job and they're like, no, we're not hiring, no thanks. So I was like, shit. And then I just thought, I don't know, maybe I'll start my own place. And it took me a while, and then I landed that ridiculous loft, and without a clue or a dollar, just started building it myself and dragged some friends in there. My old drummer built all the tables in the bar, actually.
Amazing.
Chip, she's a carpenter. She's
Wait,
incredible.
Not the tables that are still there.
Yeah, the tables in the bar that are still the tea room were all built by my drummer, and that thing just continued to sort of evolve itself and re-evolve itself and to this final stage that it's in right now. We just did a whole nother renovation of the dining room and rearranged everything. It's really beautiful.
You're getting ahead of the interview.
Sorry.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
But you also had Stephen Tanner come and help you, which is another...
Tanner I met through bands.
Okay.
He was playing bass with my friend Tracy, who's playing drums, who was in Nashville Pussy and a couple other bands. And she was my best friend. So I really knew him as a great bass player. But because he was working at Diner a block away from the house, I used to just go kick it with him and hang out. So we were friends. And then the week that I happened to be opening the restaurant, he walked out of Diner. He quit. And he was just like, Squid, what's up? Woman, come cook some food at your spot. And I was like, sure, okay. And so he just came in and started cooking.
And what was the early menu like?
It was a lot of his food. You know, I had met Stephanie Sugawara, who was one of the first chefs at Dumont.
Mm-hmm.
She opened the place with a guy named Chris, Eric, I can't remember.
he had a name.
And so we kept some of her stuff, and then Tanner came in and started doing stuff. And Fidanza, actually, Tanner wasn't really into salad at the time. So Caroline put a couple of Caroline put a salad on the menu. It was really like everybody
kind of
put,
move.
You know, chipped in a little bit to help me sort of get the first menu out. And we had no gas kitchen. Everything was electric. I hadn't actually built a kitchen in there or anything. I didn't really think that far. So right. We had hot plates and confection ovens. He started braising a lot of meats and doing pulled pork and, you know, just doing his thing. And it was great and people loved it.
Is there anything on there from early days that's still on the menu?
You know, I think there almost was. I think that Stephanie had put this fig and ricotta
right.
toast on there, like from day one, and right. that was there, I think, maybe until a couple months ago. We have a new chef now.
Oh, I mean, that's pretty, okay, yeah. Like, that's fine.
A scant 9 years
No, the
later.
Mac and cheese. What am I talking about? That's Tanner's yeah, mac and cheese okay. with the Frank's Red Hot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Still I mean, and also untouched. I just want to say, like, 2 months ago, like, that's good enough. That, yeah. like, you could say there's two dishes.
Yeah, I mean, that's 11 years. And I don't think the ricotta and fig is on there, but the mac and cheese is still there, and that was from 2005, so.
And, I mean, obviously the neighborhood is, like, so different from 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. When did you start to really feel the shift?
After the market crashed and then recovered. It feels like when the market crashed, everything sort of just froze in time for a minute. And then when the recovery from that came, all of a sudden I opened my eyes and it was just like, you know, I think there was 4 or 5 restaurants in the whole neighborhood. Osnott's. Remember Osnott's?
Osnott's Dish.
Osnott's Dish. El Cafe, Dumont, yeah. Diner, you know, a few other places. And then, so when did the world fall apart?
2006,
7, 8?
Yeah.
So I think that there was a lot of development that had started, and also just the condos, everything about the neighborhood, everything had just frozen for like 6 right. months to a year. And then when that started to melt away, you just turned around and it was just like, you know, shit everywhere. It was out of control. And it
I like
hasn't
that analogy
down.
With frozen and melted away.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I mean,
well done.
Thanks.
And then did the new type of like clientele or like the change clientele, did that not force you to adjust, but did you adjust what you were serving in response to their requests or did the menu just
probably
change?
Not.
And Homer, when do you, what year do you enter the picture?
I don't really remember. No. What do you think?
God.
I don't know. All I know is I walked in there and Sid walked into the kitchen. I was a cook at the time. I guess I still am. And she said, "My name's Sid, I'm your boss." I go, "Okay."
Really?
Yeah. And that was pretty much it. And then I lived in fear of her for...
Really?
Well, about
that's good to know.
20 to 25 minutes.
I feel like I'm not as scary as I used to be.
No, not at all.
Where were you, and what's your background as a chef? Where were you cooking before?
I don't really have a background. I made salads in Daytona Beach over the summer. I would do shrimp cocktails occasionally for people.
As an 11-year-old?
Yeah. I just always sort of cooked food. And I don't have any formal training or anything. Sid gave me my first sort of break. I've broken out.
I'd like to cut that with a photo of the inside of the kitchen at the tea room, just so you really get the full picture.
Break, yeah. No, Sid gave me my first real job.
I mean,
we worked together for years. Yeah, for a long time.
And how did you guys grow your relationship together? Like, as the clientele grew and as, like, I mean, Roebling is now, like, an institution.
Yeah.
In that area, like, how did your skills as a chef grow and, like, your... as a restaurateur, like, how did that kind of intertwine?
Well, we knew nothing, and then we learned a lot.
It was really, really on-the-job training for everything. I mean,
and everybody.
Yeah,
involved.
And everybody. Yeah. The bartenders knew nothing. Servers yeah. knew nothing. Yeah. I knew nothing. Yeah. Sid still knows nothing. And we just sort of made it go as it goes.
It was fun.
It was the wild, wild west for a while.
Yeah.
And then we figured out that there's got to be rules and there's got to be...
Waitresses might help. And I mean, we were really like, Fred, you got to pull pork. Fred, right. Is there a Fred out
right.
there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very organic, though. I mean, in a lot of ways, like, I'm really proud of that. My band was the same way. It was just like a bunch of like friends and stuff who got together and really didn't know anything and then right. just really grew into learning how to play music and then learning how to run restaurants. Yeah. And
which is like the straight up definition of punk.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, yeah. None of us had real. Fucking master's degrees in yeah. any
or
of this
agents
stuff.
Or yeah. advisors or anything.
Or talent, or foresight.
Yeah.
You know, we just kind of made it work, and yeah. that was kind of the most fun part about it, is yeah. that we could do it all together.
Totally.
Homer, do you remember the first dish that you made that made it onto the menu?
The first dish I made was a poached egg omelet.
Okay.
And I served it to my friend Orion, who was sitting at the bar, and he told me it tasted like 1,000 penises in his mouth at the same time, and I was like, we've done it.
Did he really?
He did indeed. I believe it remains on the menu to this day.
And is there I was going to say, is there a dish that you feel like should have made it on but didn't, but, you know, the thousand penises is the bar to entry, then, you know. It kind of like
a, I had a dish called a thousand penises, but it was a pulled pork sandwich. Nobody really wanted it. No, that's a joke. There was a dish. No, everything, like, I don't give a fuck if people, if like, my stuff gets recognized. I like when people like whatever we make. You know what I mean? I try to be as selfless as I can about that kind of stuff, because that's not my problem. I don't need to prove anything. I want people to enjoy themselves.
Okay. Well, we're gonna take a quick musical break, and then we're gonna talk about the anniversary and River Styx, because I love it, and it's right near my house.
Yes.
And but we're gonna play a song from Blood Orange, who was who came on the show and did one of his first kind of like Blood Orange performances on here. Who just did two sold-out shows at the Apollo last night. So congrats to Dev. This is off of Snacky Tunes Comp Volume 1. We'll be right back.
I feel unique, not yet complete. Your freezing eyes fall on me. Pour me, pour you, pour us. What's wrong with a little touch? I'm just a boy, so lonely. I am not your savior. I am not your savior, baby girl. I am not your savior. I am not your savior. One, two, three, four, green. You mean you're incomplete. And your freezing thighs warm me. Pour me, pour you, pour us. What's wrong with a little touch? I'm just a boy, I'm so lonely. I am not your savior. I am not your savior, baby girl. I am not your savior. I am not your savior.
Welcome back. So when did River Styx come into an inkling of an idea?
Long before it actually happened.
Okay.
Yeah, we wanted to do something else. It took us a long time to find the right space.
It's such a great location.
Thank you.
It is awesome.
We love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did it take to find that spot?
Millions of dollars.
To find the spot, it was very like a handshake under the table.
It was
like a friend of a friend, good friend. You know, landlord didn't want to list it, wouldn't work with brokers. He only wanted to talk to people that he knew through people that he trusted. So it was a total like friendship deal.
That's awesome. Thing.
Yeah, and he's awesome. So it was cool.
And what direction did that take, or what did you feel that you could do there that you couldn't do at Roebling Tea Room?
I think, you know, Roebling was such a like a tumbleweed, or like a, you know, a snowball that just keeps haphazardly kind of growing, like we were saying before, like really organic. I thought we had this idea like, wow, we actually know what we're doing now, we can do this right.
Right.
Which doesn't really work.
And we didn't.
Foolish people, no. The only fallacy is that you thought that you could do it right.
Yeah. So
at least we thought that though.
Yeah.
You know, like, once again, knowing, you know, thank God we didn't know, because
if we'd known, Jesus, we'd be in Miami right now soaking up the rays.
Yeah. And also it was, you know, a chance for us to do something together, you know, Homer
yes,
and I.
Yes, that's very true.
So the partnership was, you know, from the beginning for menu creation and concept design as well, too?
Yeah.
Awesome.
We did everything together.
So not being a chef or not having any formal training, what thinking did you put into when you were kind of putting this menu together?
Well, I wasn't alone. I got to say, Jenna Spina helped design a lot of the menu, and we sort of worked together. In, I don't know, we didn't have any goddamn ideas. We didn't know what we were doing. It was kind of fun. Like, we finally had a place to sort of play and experiment, you know? The Tea Room was such an institution.
Right.
That there was expectations. You needed to have these certain menu items. You needed to have it at this time. You needed to have it at this price point. And with Styx, we got to make it up by ourselves, you know, and it was fun. We got to sort of create our own new restaurant. It wasn't a tea room that turned into a lunch place, that turned into a dinner thing.
Right.
It was a restaurant.
Right.
You know, and it was great to have that kind of freedom.
I think, you know, underneath it all, it's always been the same for us. Like, we want people to enjoy it.
Yeah.
We want it to be fun, and we never felt like we needed to abide by, you know, any strict rules of, like, what, you know, strict rules of like what kind of food we were serving, and also, you know, get into like a gimmicky nonsense. Like, we just wanted to serve food that we knew people would want to eat.
Yeah, and there was also no restrictions as to what their experience would be. You know, when you go to the Tea Room, you expect something.
Mm. That's interesting.
That didn't exist at the Tea at River Styx. We could sort of define how we wanted people to experience their evening, or how a meal would progress, or how evening would progress, or even just drinks at the bar. You know, it could sort of like be our own. There were no preconceived notions as to what people were going to get when they walked in the door, and that was fun because we can make shit up.
And has the face found its own rhythm yet, or do you feel like it's still evolving and kind of like finding its own way?
Well, she's our rhythm section. I'm very offbeat.
I feel like we're pretty close to full circle, actually, on that.
Yeah.
It's been over 2 years, you know, and I feel like we're finally getting there, yeah.
I mean, I'm completely biased because that's like my Sunday night watering hole. Not that I've met you two before, but...
No, I want your bias.
Okay.
No,
but only because, like, it felt like... I mean, there's a ton of different restaurants and different types of restaurants, but what I liked about River Styx is, like, it just felt really comfortable from the get-go, and the food could either be the nachos, which... The nacho girls out
there.
Nothing
wrong with that. Nacho queen of America.
Yeah. Or it could be, you know, full dinner, but the drinks, it's just like, I could feel like you could lose like a few hours in there.
Yeah.
Roebling, I felt like you feel a little guilty because you know there's like an hour and a half wait behind you.
It's that's the nice thing about Styx is that you can play it any way you want to. If you want to sit at the bar and just have a drink, fine. If you want to sit at a table and just have a plate of nachos with your pals, fine. If you want to sit at a table and have a four-course meal, that's fine. I mean, that's
or
like,
four rounds of nachos.
Or 18 rounds of nachos. Yeah. And maybe more drinks.
Also really psyched to get out of Williamsburg, too, because that neighborhood just changed. I mean, from the time that we started, and I was living there, I was working there from the very early 90s, and I started living there in 97, and I moved over there because I was tattooing in the neighborhood and just didn't feel like, you know, taking the train over there anymore. I mean, that neighborhood changed so much, and, you know, at that point, we just, like, dined at just... Greenpoint is more like, you know, like the new Wild West, like, just get out of this neighborhood and the saturation and the tourists, and it's just, you know, we were just dying to do something, be in a different place for a little totally. While.
And we both live there. We live four yeah. blocks away from each other.
Yeah, I live on Guernsey.
Yeah.
So right. But I mean, yeah. that area, it's really great. One other thing I want to touch on is the music in the restaurants. How do you differentiate between like what plays in Roebling, what plays in Styx, or who gets to pick?
You know, a lot of it I really feel like has to do with the people that work there. You know, they have to have a certain vibe, and we like to. I can't talk.
Roebling is a box. Roebling is a big square, so lo-fi stuff sounds great.
Yeah,
and Styx is kind of longer.
Yeah.
So that stuff doesn't sort of resonate off the walls. So that's just sort of musically speaking. What is that? Auditorily? What does it sound? Whatever the fuck. But at the end of the day, Roebling plays a lot more Neil Young, and we play a lot more Van Halen.
Perfect.
That's true.
And for the anniversary, I know you're giving Roebling a facelift, and you're bringing in some new talent as well.
Our 10 years was up, and so I just felt like it was, you know, it's actually gone through a few different incarnations for people yeah. who have known it long enough. There used to be couches in the back, and it was yeah. like, you know.
Oh, yeah, I remember, like.
The breastfeeding circles. It's a weird stuff going on there.
That was the best.
Yeah, that was when there was like 10 moms in Williamsburg.
Yeah.
They all used to meet there. Now there's like 40,000.
Oh, everyone. Yes. Everywhere. Man and woman.
Now we don't even let children in there anymore.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was just honestly a little bit bored, and I just was kind of itching to make some changes
yeah.
and kind of celebrate the 10 years. And, you know, in 10 years, so much about the neighborhood has changed and so much about the way we wanted to facilitate, like, business. And, you know, we wanted to expand the bar, and we wanted to just move it around. And it was a nice opportunity, and the response has been amazing. I love it. It's like, I didn't know if we could pull it off doing something really fresh and keeping the heart of the tea room. Have
sure.
you seen it since it's changed?
No, I haven't. But
it's so much more yeah. beautiful.
It's,
I mean, it was beautiful. To begin with, and now it's just really stunning.
Still, when I don't often sit and have dinner there, but I was my dad's in town, so I was hanging out there last night, and I was just like, God, it's so beautiful here. And we managed to pull this thing off where we really changed it, but we kept the heart of it completely, so
right.
you don't feel like you're in a different restaurant.
That's really
but yet
tough.
It's better, and it's cozier, and it's funner, and I just love it.
And new chef.
Oh, Joey Cole.
Yeah.
My new secret weapon. He's amazing.
Yeah. Cannibal.
Cannibal.
Which is like one of mine and Darren's like all-time favorite
yeah,
restaurants.
Per se.
Yeah.
He's the butcher there. He's a... comes from a...
How were you able to... What combination of words did you say to convince him to come over?
I sent him a picture of me and my punk rock band.
I was going to say, his only combination is fuck you, come to work.
And I would never do that, but she showed me some Facebook pictures or whatever, and I was like, well, that doesn't seem fair because he doesn't know what I look like.
Yeah.
And I knew what he looked like, and I'm not on, you know, the Instagram or anything like yeah. that. So all I had
private
were these,
account.
Like, you know, the pictures of the band. So I was like, if you can figure out which one I am, you know, from 20 years ago, now you can have the job. And then he sent me a picture of him at 15 with a big green mohawk
oh
and
God.
His little punk rock t-shirt on. And I was like, you know, it was love at first sight.
I should have tried that. I used to go see her band play when I was a kid.
Yeah. But you just, yeah, but she just scared you.
I had no idea. I mean, I worked for her for a year or so before I knew you were in that band.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not on the Instagram, but people want to come to the restaurants, where can they find all the information? How can they track it down?
Roebling Tea Room is Roebling Tea Room. They're easy to find on the internet, on
yeah.
the Google, right?
On the Google.
River Styx NY, RoeblingTeaRoom.com.
River Styx has Instagram and Facebook and all
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, we have all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm
oh, okay.
Just, I'm the, like, it,
yeah.
the old
you're the
woman
Luddite.
That doesn't know how to use yeah. it, but mm. somebody's doing it.
Well, congratulations on the anniversary.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for coming by.
Thank
I will
you
be coming at the nachos real quick and
hell
seeing
yeah.
the redesign. Next up on the show, we have Annie. Not yet. Let me throw to it.
Chill, dude.
Next up on the show, we have Annie Rossi live, but we have one of my all-time favorite songs to close out the year. Tijuana, who didn't quite make it out of Williamsburg, but they were a great band, playing Oh My Marie, one of my all-time favorite songs, live on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. Annie, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I think you are the first person that I have ever had on the show that's built their own instrument.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I would love to know how that came about.
Sure.
But first off, like, what instruments were you playing that just weren't doing it for you?
Well, I have a classical background in violin and piano, and then I started songwriting on the viola. And many of my earlier stuff was done on the viola, bowing, singing, plucking. And then I started to want it to have more of a role of like an electric guitar. Mm-hmm. And so that came along, like a lot of tedious complications came along with trying to turn it into an electric guitar. So,
turning the viola into...
Yeah, like I had like zip ties and like humbucker pickups like glued onto it, and it would always feed back and it would always go out of tune.
Do you feel like you maybe pushed like the viola like more than almost anyone?
I don't know more than anyone, but definitely like there were other string players who I would encounter who would feel like maybe uncomfortable or angry that I was like defacing my instrument in some way or...
Did they think it was sacrilege?
Sacrilege is probably a word that they use behind my back. Yeah. But
Did you find a support group at all, like instrument hackers?
Certainly, yeah. There are definitely like plenty of string players who are also very open to this idea. And I understand the institution of the strings being delicate too, but then I kind of was frustrated with the viola for a couple of years. I tried to get it to do what I wanted to do. And eventually I started talking with my friend Thor Harris, and he had been building some of these club-looking stick things with viola strings on them for Swans, mm-hmm. The band that he's playing in, and he said, I can try and build you some, and we can experiment, and it ended up being quite simple and kind of seamless the way that...
Before we get to the instrument, what was like ultimately the thing that the viola just like didn't do for you? Where did it just fall short?
I think where it fell short was that I didn't want to use it as a melodic instrument like bowing it. I wanted the function to be more like a guitar, and so it's like trying to push a circle into a square. It just doesn't quite want to. It just doesn't have that ease. So basically, I took the things from the viola that were really important to me and what I wanted to do, and made this more accommodating to strumming and like.
And what elements did you bring over?
Well, the shape is clearly gone. It's just like a tree branch. The thing that stayed was basically the dimensions of the instrument and the actual strings, the viola strings. That's really about it. And that it's fretless.
And how did you come up with the name Electric Stick?
I was holding it.
I mean, it's pretty literal, but
yeah. For now, I feel like there's something kind of so utilitarian and simple about it that the first thing that came to mind was the electric stick, and it felt it felt appropriate.
And does the wood, like the nature of the wood, I mean, both instruments use it, like change the sound, or how does it change the sound?
That's a great question. I mean, I guess Thor and I are still kind of experimenting. This is the second of three that we've made, and probably the best for me, playing wise. And this is made of a certain kind of wood called crepe myrtle, and then we have others that are made out of different wood, and it does sound really different. This is like probably the warmest sounding one, but of course it's just solid wood. It's not like hollow inside, so it doesn't matter as much as like a regular viola wood. But
do you know what the coldest wood would be?
I don't know. Maybe a palm tree? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because they talk about, like, violins and violas. Like, it takes time to warm up the instrument and to, like, to really kind of bring it to life.
Yeah.
Do you feel the electric stick is, like, the same way, or do you think different properties are associated with it?
In a lot of ways, I think it bypasses that whole process because it's so much about the way that it's picking up the sound through the electric pickup. So much of the aging process of violas is about the resonance and the space in the instrument that allows it to be acoustic and change over time. Chances are, like, what's going to affect this more is the amp that I'm plugging it into, and not necessarily the wood will, like, factor in, but it's more, I guess, what the amplifier is more of what's speaking to the ear instead of the actual instrument.
Okay. Can we hear a song?
Yes.
Okay. What's the name of the first song you're going to play?
It's called Wild West. This is a new song. I haven't put it on an album yet. Do you need it or me? Okay.
So you've been working...
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
The cup. Yeah. So you've been working on building this instrument for, or playing with it, a year and a half. What are some of the lessons that you've learned in building it? Or you and Thor, I guess.
Sure. Thor definitely is the man behind all the technical stuff with the instrument. But I guess what I've learned is that... the instrument that I'm playing with and the range and the resonance of this of the sound can kind of open up my ideas about melody and the way I sing. My voice kind of follows the instrument in a way, or kind of matches the timbre of the instrument, and I've been pretty inspired by that part of it.
That's interesting. So, like, originally, you were trying to make songs on a viola that wouldn't let you push, and now you have this new instrument, and now the instrument, you would say, is pushing you?
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, that's actually a great way to put it. There's just kind of a sense of ease. There's not all this stuff in front of me that I have to overcome before I can actually just make the music, so...
So, like, what type of melodies or what type of ideas is this inspiring in you?
It's a combination of things. Definitely, it's... since you can't see it, for those of you, it's kind of rustic looking, and it kind of conjures a lot of kind of raw, outdoorsy kind of Wild West themes. That was kind of one of the first songs I wrote on it. But also just like simplicity and minimalism, kind of, it's brought a lot of that to how I'm working through things.
How does your... I mean, you have a few records that you've already written. Are they translatable onto the instrument, or is it all new work?
They definitely are. I will play a song from my last record where the viola was actually playing what I'm going to play on the instrument. But a lot of my live set that I'm playing, which, by the way, I have a show tonight at the Manhattan Inn.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. Right by where I live.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, okay. I also live over there. A lot of the set is like half stuff, old stuff that I've translated onto the new instrument, and half new stuff kind of thing.
Has there been like an uproar from your fans that you've moved away from the viola?
I don't really know. I guess I still have more, I need more time and space to kind of express what's going on, but it is a viola essentially. I mean, it definitely is still a viola, but, I guess I'm more into expressing ideas as a songwriter and a lyricist and a singer than... I guess I view this more as like a vehicle for songwriting now, as opposed to like, I'm a violist and I...
I understand. You know. Oh, it's interesting. So this has also somewhat changed your like self-identity as a musician.
Yeah, I think it's part of a process that's been happening, not to feel so tied to what the music is made with, just kind of letting it happen with whatever's kind of in front of me, trying to make it, just not so much about the objects involved with making the music.
Okay. Why don't we hear another song?
Okay.
What's this one?
This is called Crushing Limbs, and this is off my last record, Heavy Meadow. I need to just tune really quick. That's the thing.
No problem.
This is the guy that... It can be kind of finicky.
Does it not hold the tune as much, or...?
It does relatively well, but I move tunings around quite often. Okay.
Draws.
So some of your previous records, you've worked with Steve Albini.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like, and what kind of lessons? Because he's obviously known for teaching lots of lessons.
Uh-huh.
What lessons did he impart on you?
Honestly, whenever I think about the time that I spent working with him, I just saw him as a person who was very, very good and efficient at what he does. I know it sounds clinical, but he really actually just has a really important skill set. For a lot of musicians, it's hard to find engineers that you really believe can document what you need to do. Eric here is actually another example of a great engineer who's going to record my record.
Eric's on drums, for those of you who can't see.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess I learned from Steve too that you, as musicians, to kind of transmit what we need to do, we need people who have those skill sets. It's really important. And they're kind of, I hate to say it, but they're kind of dying out. There isn't the same amount of money and resources in the industry to keep those people around. So Steve taught me a lesson of we need other people to make what we want to make.
I want to follow up on the dying out thing, but like, what are the skills that you feel that he had? Like, what are some of the more tangible ones that he brought to the table?
Just, for one thing, like the dilemma that I had that time, I was playing the viola and I was singing, and I needed to perform it live. So basically you have two really important elements that can't be separated. And he just dealt with that limitation really well and mic'd the room. He put the way that he mic'd the room was very creative, and he kind of problem solved this thing that I could never quite get around,
which records did you do with him?
Rockwell.
Okay.
Really good drum sounds, excellent drum sounds. Also just pretty laid back and easy to work with. And
why do you feel like people like him are dying out? Because, I mean, there's this argument that, like, it's never been easier to, like, set up your own studio and do everything in your house.
Sure.
So the barrier to entry is low, but...
I think certainly there's been like a ton of accessibility to be able to record your own music, but and that's helpful in a lot of ways, but there is definitely a very deep and nuanced skill to recording music that only gets passed on to people through generations of music making. And as you know, I'm sure there's not really much music left in the music industry. I mean, there's some floating around, but I just think because there's, like I said, less and less resource, there's less money for people to actually make a living at being an engineer. And
right.
So it's a dying art, and it's an incredibly, it takes a lot of skill and a lot of knowledge and experience to actually get to where Steve Albini or Eric has gotten.
So the next record, recording early next year,
uh-huh.
All new songs built for the electric stick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where are you recording?
At the Magic Shop in Soho.
Awesome. And then that will be like a new record next year?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. And you said you're playing a show tonight?
I'm playing a show tonight at the Manhattan Inn.
I love that place.
Yeah. Actually, it'll be a trio, Eric, and a bass player who's not able to make it today.
Okay.
Well,
we want to make sure we have time for one more song.
Sure.
But where can people find your earlier records, get in touch with you?
Yeah.
See photos of the instruments?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, Annie _ Rossi. I'm really bad at the internet.
That's fine. That's like a running stuff. That's a running theme in today's show.
Okay.
Yeah.
My website's under construction. But Facebook.
But just imagine having like that old school like Hazard tape like from like the 90s, yeah. Like under construction.
Yeah.
Like my under construction page is under construction.
Yeah. I have records on iTunes and also, there's a label called Three Syllables that has Heavy Meadow for sale as well.
Oh, amazing. One last question.
Sure.
Have any fans started sending you pieces of wood yet?
Pieces of wood?
Yeah.
No, that's really cool, though. I would be I'd be open to that.
Yeah. I mean, you could potentially put a call in, like, an international call. Because, I mean, that wood is not a, it's not a big piece.
Yeah.
So you could potentially put out, like, an international call for, like, 2x4-ish
yeah.
size wood.
Okay.
To see if Thor could transform that.
Yeah. I might have to steal your idea here.
You can just take it.
Okay.
I'm never going to have use for that.
Okay. Thank you.
So I want to thank Sid and Homer for coming on, and congratulations again to 10 years of Roebling Tea Room. Shout out to Darren and Anna. Shout out to my family. It's been a wild fucking year, is all I can say. Shout out to my girlfriend, who I adore. And I hope everyone has a good holiday and is safe and, you know, will return next year for the beginning of year 7 of Snacky Tunes. So awesome. You're going to play the last song of this year.
No way.
Yeah. So
2015.
Any message you want to impart onto guests, listeners, family, friends? Doesn't have to be a shout out. Could be cryptic. Could be a word. Could be a feeling.
I don't know. Just enjoy listening. I don't know.
Oh, that's actually perfect.
Okay.
Well done. What is the name of the last song?
It's called Get Me Workin'.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you in a few weeks. Thanks to Liz, Jack, Aaron, Patrick, Heritage, the whole Heritage family. Bye.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.